This is Matt Wells at UN News. As the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, officially declared the end of its most recent deadly outbreak of the Ebola virus on Tuesday, one of the senior officials leading the World Health Organization's response has been recounting how even just reaching the first victims was a major logistical challenge. A total of 29 people died from the disease in Equateur province, which can be transmitted by a sick or dead person carrying the virus or infected animals. Dr. René van der Vert is deputy head of operations at WHO, who coordinated efforts against the Ebola outbreak in the DRC after it was declared in early May. And she spoke to Daniel Johnson earlier this week in Geneva.
So the first case was not one case, it was actually 21 cases of an undiagnosed illness. And this what was alerted the international community and, of course, the Ministry of Health. There were 17 community deaths that occurred in one health area, and this alerted everyone because this was very suspicious. So following this identification of 21 cases of this undiagnosed illness, a team from the ministry, WHO, Médecins Sans Frontières, went to that health zone and did what we call an investigation of those cases, including those deaths.
Just how difficult was it to get to this particular remote region of Equateur province?
Very difficult. This was in Ikoko Impangi health area. That's really in the jungle of the Equateur province. So this, at that point, we didn't have helicopters going to that part. So this is a team leaving from Bandaka by car to a very remote area of the Equateur province. And during the response, which we rapidly mounted together again with the Ministry of Health, the logistics turned out to be very challenging. This is a very remote part, very few roads. But I think what was part of the success is that we rapidly were able to set up air bridges. This thanks to the support from other UN agencies, including WFP, but also MONUSCO, who made sure that we had helicopter flights from Bandaka down to the three affected health zones, and also more regular flights from Kinshasa up to Mbandaka. And without those airlifts, I think the operations would have even been more challenging than they were.
So that was the initial response after the outbreak was declared on the 8th of May.
Yes.
You did say that there were 21 cases of an undiagnosed illness, and that's really what alerted you, because Ebola is very easy to misdiagnose, isn't it? It looks a lot like, or the fever at least, might be similar to what you get with cholera or Lassa fever.
It does look similar and it does look different. What often alerts us within the health system is when health workers are concerned, because this is an illness that often people come to a health facility and often the first affected are the nurses or the health workers that touch that patient or touch that community death. So this is often what gets the alarm bell starting. Here it was indeed this cluster in one community.
What was your principal concern? Was it that you would get to Mbandaka, which is a city of a million plus people?
That was indeed immediately the concern. When we looked at the map at this Bikoro health zone, it's actually at a lake that connects to the Congo River and indeed upstream, having then Mbandaka, as you said, a significant urban setting. And unfortunately, the worry that we had that we would see cases in Mbandaka actually confirmed. So we did get four confirmed cases in the city of Mbandaka. Luckily, they were all emerging from other health zones. So we never had real urban transmission, which was the biggest worry. Also, as you see on the map, Mbandaka is on the Congo River. Very heavy traffic on that river to Kinshasa, which is a city of more than 10 million inhabitants, but also near to neighboring countries, in particular the Republic of Congo and the Central African Republic. And I think that's why this outbreak in particular got everybody on very high alert. Many things were different compared to the outbreak in West Africa. But the first difference was indeed that we as WHO, we had some very tough lessons to learn from the West Africa outbreak. And in this outbreak, we mounted a very, very rapid response. We immediately dispersed 2 million from our WHO contingency fund for emergency. We very, very rapidly deployed people, including myself. I left on May 9th. My colleagues from the regional office in Brazzaville crossed the river on May 8th. And we had more than 200 WHO people deployed within weeks to this outbreak. Also, the fact that we partnered very well, of course, this is a government-led response, but that we partnered very well with the rest of the UN system. As I said, both the peacekeeping part with MONUSCO giving us very significant support, but also other parts of the UN, such as the World Food Programme, UNICEF. So this was really a collective response, with WHO giving the intelligence, if you want, on where to target and make sure that this virus indeed did not spread. The biggest challenge was indeed logistics. Even in Bandaka, there is very limited water, very limited electricity, with suddenly a significant increase in partners. The living conditions for ourselves were not easy. My colleagues that lived in Itipo, they didn't have running water. They had to walk to the river to wash themselves. So I do think that the rain was very, very difficult. A lot of the contact tracing had to be done by motorcycle, not even by cars. So the logistics, the living conditions, not easy, but great team spirit. And I think that was what made this outbreak and this response also very different, that we all felt this collective responsibility despite very difficult terrain and not always having lunch and not always having dinner and not always sleeping, that we felt that we were really at the brink of something that could go horribly wrong, and that only by working together and forgetting differences between partners that we would get there.
What did the impact of having a vaccine, even though it wasn't a particularly tested vaccine, what can you talk about the vaccine and how what was going on behind the scenes as soon as you knew it was Ebola, and where we were with the vaccine?
So this was indeed different in this outbreak, is that we deployed the vaccine very quickly. The government of the Democratic Republic of Congo gave the authorization for the importation of this vaccine. As you said, this is not a licensed vaccine yet, so it is under a research protocol. It's not a straightforward vaccine. It needs to be kept at least minus 70 degrees, so you can only imagine the logistics that go with that in a part of the world where not only is it very remote, but it's also very, very, very hot. So it gave particular challenges to this response. At the same time, it was also a great opportunity because for once you could give people hope. Often people say if it's just giving people some treatment with still very high chances of people dying is that there is a fait accompli, you can't do anything about Ebola. So the fact that this time around we could deliver a vaccine, not only to the people that are in contact, so the what we call a ring vaccination, people that have been in contact with a confirmed case would receive the vaccine, so that gave them hope. I think it also changed for the health workers, because the frontline workers, people that really are in contact with these confirmed cases, were also part of the vaccination strategy. And I think that as a health worker, that keeps you motivated because you do feel more protected, but it also changes the way you can treat patients by giving the patients and their families some real sense of hope. And I do feel that this was significantly different in this outbreak compared to the one in West Africa. This vaccine is not a magic bullet, and I think as we saw in this outbreak, you still need to invest in all the other pillars of an Ebola response. And that includes indeed safe and dignified burials, that includes making sure that you have all the contacts of confirmed cases, that you know who they are, that you visit them. In this case, indeed, we could administer the vaccine. But so, yes, this is an important new tool in the toolbox, but it's not a magic bullet that will solve all the future outbreaks.
Less than one third of World Health Organization member states have surveillance systems in place to pick up the early warning signs of unusual disease events. So if only one third of WHO members have this kind of surveillance in place, we're going to be in trouble with future outbreaks. And I'm not just talking about Ebola, I'm talking about SARS and avian flu in very rich countries as well, which should be able to cope with these things.
Yeah, that's indeed the investments that need to be made in all countries. Like you say, nobody knows where the next disease appears, and that's why all countries need to invest in solid surveillance systems to rapidly pick up new diseases, but also all diseases such as the Ebola virus, so that we can very rapidly contain them.